All right, good morning. It's great to be with you guys today. My name is Pastor Chris Harrell, and I'm one of the pastors in residency here at Eastlake Church Network. And what that means is similar to how a doctor goes to another hospital after he has worked somewhere and been somewhere. Oh, picture of my family. I want to explain that picture because that picture needs some explaining. Similar to how a doctor goes to a hospital to learn, and then they're sent out to go work in their own hospital. That's what a residency is, for those that may not have connected that. And so we've been here, and I just want to say a special thank you to those of you who have been a part of the Cannonball Giving Initiative. Because of your generosity, my wife Brenda and I and our little girl Eliana, which will be featured here in a picture shortly, we have been able to be in San Diego learning at Eastlake Church and learning all about the way it is that God has for us to grow and learn and be sent back out. And so we're going to plant a church here in 2018, later on this year in the Orange County and then multi-campus into Inland Empire areas. And you may never sit down or meet any of the people that are going to be in those areas. You may never help them with their marriage issues or raising their kids or going through the death of a loved one or the normal stuff of just joy in life that comes in being a church leader, but you will always be involved in that, will always be an extension of your ministry if you have been a part of Cannonball. And so I just want to say thank you so much, because without you, we wouldn't have a place to stay down here. We wouldn't have gas in our car. We wouldn't have been able to eat. I wouldn't be able to feed my little girl. And we could do all that while learning about what God has for us in the future. And so just from our family to you, thank you so much for your sacrifice and your generosity. This has been our first year in San Diego for Christmas, so we don't have any traditions here. So I asked Pastor James Grogan about some traditions of what it is that we could kind of do to make Christmas come alive in San Diego. It's obviously not very cold, so it's not like you get your jackets and scarves and beanies on and like go hit the snow slopes. So I was like, what do we do? And he goes, oh, I got you covered. You got to go to Hotel Del, and when you get there, there's a beautiful Christmas tree, make you feel all warm and cozy. There's hot chocolate. There's an ice skating rink that you could go ice skating, and there's these giant snowmen you could take pictures of, with your family. It's going to be an incredible time. Lights outside, just a really cool architecture. Just Christmas movie, like it feels like you stepped right into one. I said, I'm on it, let's go. Now, I told you, my wife, her name's Brenda, and we got Eliana. This is a picture of my family, and that's us this last week. That looks super happy, but that was before the ride started. After that, the little girl is not smiling so much. So that was a perfect capture of us this last week. I think I have one more picture of her just because my little girl, I love her. She's kissing Daddy. There's Eliana Joy. I love you, little honey. So this is our family. Now, my sister-in-law, my wife's sister, she has a 4 and a 2-year-old. They were here for Christmas as well. And her husband is buried in Chula Vista. And so they were down visiting and wanted to do Christmas near his gravesite. So that's where we were. So it was really kind of a big deal for us to do something festive and fun and expressive and all that. So Pastor James said, go Hotel Del. So we get them. And then my other sister-in-law, who's a senior in high school, she comes too. So we all get in the cars and we head on over to Hotel Del. We pull in, and there's this overhang, and then right across you can kind of, there's a walkway. I pull really far over, put my flashers on. It's cold. I don't want them to walk from where the parking is. So my daughter and my wife are getting out. My sister-in-law parked at some other place. As they're getting out, this lady walks. She's walking, and she's with two other people, and she's walking by my window. And I don't know exactly how to describe her to you, what exact phrase I should use. She was drunk. So So she's walking by, and I think she thought my window was up because she looks right like into my window, like off the side, and she goes like this. She goes, "Nice parking spot." Now, we don't know each other that well. You know, I've never spoke here before, so let me kind of introduce a little bit about me to you. I grew up in the Bay Area of San Francisco, the East Bay, in this little city called Oakland. And in Oakland, I was raised, I didn't know Jesus, and I wasn't always the God-fearing, honorable, holy man of God that I am today. And there's still that part of me that is still Oakland Chris in there. And every now and then, Oakland Chris wants to come out. And let me tell you, on Christmas night 2017... he wanted to play. So I leaned out my window to this lady and I said, ma'am, I'm sorry, I'm dropping off women and children first, kind of the rules of, you know, being great to them. And I have my flashers on. I'm sorry to inconvenience you tonight. And she turns around and starts to try to like mutter something to me in language that only people who have been around drunk people can understand. And they, as she did that, Oakland Chris came on out. And I said, you know what, ma'am, why don't you just get walking? Walk, 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 walk. I even did the hand signal to my ever-living shame. It gets worse. Then this other drunk lady was over there, and I'm like, when did you guys start drinking eggnog? I mean, it's 6 o'clock. Like, what's the deal? And like, I didn't say that. I wanted to say that, but I didn't. And they start kind of going out, and I'm just like, get out, let's go. Like, go across. So my wife goes, the baby has a diaper, she goes to change. My sister-in-law, 4 2-year-old, and my other sister-in-law, senior in high school, they're walking up. They're like, hey, what should we do? I said, you know what? Why don't you go into the Christmas tree? Because it's supposed to just really just gather the Christmas spirit this year. So why don't you go in and just partake of the beauty and wonder and awe of that which is the Hotel Dell's Christmas tree. Now, my family's Mexican, okay? And so some cultures are a little sensitive to certain things that are like potentially really bad. And so my sister-in-law, she texts me, she goes, hey, how come the Christmas tree's upside down? And I was like, oh man. And she's like, isn't that satanic? And I'm like, oh man, what are we doing here, man? And it's a little weird when you're the one white guy around a bunch of everyone who isn't white. They're like, why'd the white guy bring us to some satanic Illuminati ritual here at the Hotel Dell? And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not, I don't know why. I didn't even pick this place. And so now we get out there, we get the hot chocolate, and I'm like, I got to save this somehow. My sister-in-law, who's a senior in high school, she goes, I want to go ice skating. I'm like, I don't really ice skate. It's not my deal. And she's wanting to, and then my wife is like, let's do it. My sister-in-law's like, the kids are like, yes, let's do it. They start like chanting, and I'm like, okay, fine, let's do it. So we go, we get me and her, we get our ice skates, you know, ready to go, $175 later for 2 pair, and then I don't know how many of you are like not feet people, but I know there's a few of you in every crowd, people who like, you don't get down with feet, okay? Feet is not your thing. Like if someone tries to put their feet underneath you while they're sitting next to the couch, like your husband or wife try to dig their feet underneath you to be all cozy, you're like, no, like no, this is the no-go zone with your feet. You take those feet somewhere else, like wherever, scrub them with Comet, but get them out of here. I don't want to deal with that. And so imagine that, and as I'm looking down at these ice skates before I put my feet, the thought comes on my mind, like, who else's feet have already been in these ice skates with their dirty, funky, unwashed, gangrene having, toe jam infested, sweating out, their athlete's foot? I'm just like, ugh, I literally thought I could hear the ice skates breathing. I'm like, oh man, what's in there? So I just put my feet in there and they like squish around in there. I'm like, oh, this is bad. We walk onto the ice skate like rink and I'm just like, you know, whatever spray of Lysol they thought fixed this doesn't really do the trick. And I'm on the ice and I'm not good. So I'm on the wall for the first go around. And then I see this guy in blue jeans and a white shirt. He's zipping around like he's Brian Boitano, like, which is a joke that only those of you who are over 30 think is funny. But and he's rolling around, and I'm like, man. And I kind of get inspired. I'm thinking like, I'm gonna try to do something. So I get off the wall, and then you get to the edge where you have to turn, and I'm really bad at the turn, so I'm doing like the one-legged like turn, 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 turn. And then I see him, and he does this thing where he's doing like the crossover turn on the turns, like he's crossing his skates over. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna try that right there. I'm gonna try to get this. So I get up on the first one, and I do like one crossover. I'm like, whoa! Felt the flow, right? I was like, ooh, adrenaline was rushing. I'm feeling good about it. Next one comes around, and I go again, and I do like two of them, and I'm like, oh, so now I get confident. And you guys, I start zipping around this place. Man, I'm going around. I'm looking at people. I'm just like, look at me. I'm just feeling like the wind is blowing. I can see the snowmen. I mean, there's like real reindeer dancing over here. I mean, I swear I thought I saw Santa. It was just incredible, right? And while I'm doing this, everything's right with the world. I all of a sudden get ready, and then I bring this one foot up, and this guy kind of sketches in front of me and took my attention off. And ice skate manufacturers make the top of the ice skate really pointed so that you can stop on purpose. But if you don't want to stop on purpose, they still do the same thing. And so all of a sudden, the last sound I heard was this sound. And then I was in full-blown Superman. And I'm in the air. And I don't know about you, but like I'm old enough now where like I'm grown, so I don't fall a lot anymore. Okay? Like falling is not a part of like my worry system anymore. I don't worry about falling. But when you're a little kid, you fall a lot. So you emotionally like can accept that faster because you are just like used to it. You know you're going to fall. You fall. You emotionally are like, yep, I'm going to fall. Oh, that hurt. Okay, I get over it. I move. But I'm in total denial. I'm like in the air like, I'm fine. This is going to be okay. No big deal. Who falls? Not me. I'm not really even falling. And then I like look to the side and there's people just like pointing at me. And there's this one little 9-year-old like going like, you suck. And I'm like, oh no. And I land. And have you ever landed as an adult and fell down so hard that you make this really loud sound of all the air leaving your body at once and you just land? And I did it. And I just landed. It was like, ugh! And I skidded on the ice, and it was like the ice pushed up the side of my face, and I was just like all froze up just there. And I realized I was in so much pain, I couldn't move, and I was just laying there, and I knew I had to get off. So then the pain threshold switched to the cold threshold, and I'm like, I got to get off this ice. So I do this like military crawl to like get off the side, and I get up the wall, and I'm sitting there. A few thoughts came to my mind. The first one was, I hate you, Pastor James. And the second thought was, this is not how I thought Christmas was going to go, right? Like, this was not my picture in my mind, right? And you know what? It's funny because that doesn't just happen to me on Christmas. Like, that happens to all of us in real life. I mean, maybe it's not you falling on the ice at Christmas time, but in another way, your life can find its way to fall down on the ice, right? Like some of you right now, like parts of your marriage are falling down on the ice and they're hurting you. And it's not known to anyone in the room, and people would be surprised to find out what you're really going through. Some of you might even be here without your spouse because it's so difficult. And no one knows there's this thing between the two of you, but there is. There's this like unspoken thing. You love each other, you're committed, but man, there's this like thing, the no-go zone, right? And it's there and it's hard. And it's not what you expected. You expected to be able to like move through those things and you can't. For others of you, it's you have children that are making choices as teenagers or maybe even adult children that are just hurting them, and it hurts you as a parent. Others of you, it's your grandparents. I mean, you have adult children making bad choices, which is bad enough because, you know, these are your kids. But it's also not just your adult kids that makes your heart hurt, but now it's double for you because they have kids, your grandkids. So your kids' kids are suffering the effects of bad choices, and you watch it and you think, man, this is so hurtful. And you just came out of Christmas, so you just saw it like in your own house or at their house, and you just are like, I don't even know where to begin. I don't even know where to start this conversation. Others of you, you went to the doctor for a normal checkup and you got news that something is way worse than you thought, and you're struggling through a new medical issue, and maybe not even everyone knows, but you're going through it. Others of us, last year we didn't expect to lose someone in our family and we did. Others of us, we didn't expect to have money become such a huge stress, or someone passed away and then the fight over all the things and that upset the family and there's stuff going on there. Others of us, we thought, man, I'm going to go to college and you were thinking, you know, you're going to get into the right career and things were going to take off and things aren't. Or you had a professor that was more difficult than you thought was fair. Or you got into a relationship and it broke your heart and you didn't expect it to end the way it did. And it's like we find ourselves in these places. And even with God, like sometimes with God, we expected 2017 to be the year we were really going to connect with God. We were really going to put some first things first and make sure that he was a bigger priority in our lives than he had been. And then somehow, not because you're bad or you didn't want to. Your heart was good, but just life happened in a few different areas, and it kind of knocked you off your off track, and you got a little lost and kind of like confused, and it didn't, you know, you didn't expect it to last as long. It was just a day, but that day turned to a week, and then that week turned into a month, and that month turned into half a year, and then half a year, all of a sudden the year was gone, and you're looking at, what happened to my connection with God? What happened to this whole, like, I want to put church or the Bible or time with him or trying to live and model a better life to these children or these grandchildren or to my wife or to the people who know me. Where did that go? And what do we do when that's where we find ourselves? How do we re-engage life as we want it to be when it's become something so unlike what we thought it was going to turn out like? And fortunate for us, Jesus knew that we were going to go through this stuff. This is not a shock to God. And so God put into the Bible stories and principles that help us be able to say, okay, how do we do it? And he knew that. So today what I want to do is I want to look through a few different things that a few different people said. One of them is named John. He's a follower of Jesus. And he writes this phrase that I think is important for us to start with as a foundation. And then there's some words of Jesus about how do we recalibrate? How do we re-engage the right order when we need to? How do we do that? And then I want to listen to someone else who writes about the practical ways of doing it. His name is David. And here's the reality. When we find ourselves in these places, the tendency for us is to go out of the order that God wants us to go in. We go in opposite order, actually. We start trying to work on the outward stuff, right? Like we work on the outside relationships, the outward finance, the outward diet, the outward fitness, getting into the gym, making sure we're like fixing all the stuff on the outside. And you guys need to call this person and you need to forgive. And we're trying to just work all things. And then some of us are a little intuitive. So we know it's like, well, the outward is an expression of what's going on the inside. So, you know, you're enlightened. So you're like, well, it's not just the outward. We gotta work on the inward, right? So you know you're kind of smart. And so it's like, I got to work on me and my emotions and my mind, and I got to forgive some people, or I've got to forgive myself, or I need to get some help. I need to get some better tools of how to handle moments where I feel stressed or angry or lonely or insecure or jealous or frustrated, or when I feel alone, or when I just feel like this isn't working as I thought it would. How do I manage temptation when it's so bad and I know I don't want to do that, but I end up falling? How I got to get some tools to help me manage that stuff in a better way. So you know that, but the reality is that Jesus tells us that when we focus on the outward, or the inward even, we're out of order. Because he set up a godly, heavenly order for us on earth to follow. And when we put first things first, when we do the things in the order he says we're supposed to do, everything falls into place when God is in his rightful place. So he says, I don't want you to start working on the outward, though the outward's important. And I don't even want you to start focusing on the inward, though the inward is really important. I want you not to go outward or inward, but I want you to focus first on the upward. I want you to focus here, and that's what this new series, Reengage, is all about, is for us to be able to learn how do we do it in the priority that God says works for us. So I want to give you the series' big idea. Why don't you write this down in your notes so you have the outline. We can reengage upward, inward, and then outward by understanding that we are loved. We can reengage upward, we're going to talk about this week, and then next week we're going to talk about inward, and we'll invite you to come back next week as we talk about that, and then outward, in 2 weeks we'll talk about that. How do we do that? Well, we can do that by understanding, first and foremost, that we are loved, and this is where one of Jesus' followers, John, he wrote it like this in 1 John chapter 4, verse 19, and I'd like to read this out loud together, if you don't mind. He says this, let's read it together out loud, ready, begin. We love because he first loved us. Let's say that again. We love because he first loved us. That's a slight typo. It's like we love. Like we love him because he loved us first. Like we are able to love him. Why? Well, because he extends the invitation. Now, if you grew up in church, or you grew up in a religious system like I did, I kind of grew up in a place that said, like, you know, you gotta, every time you mess up, God's kind of mad at you. I want to let you know that Jesus stands alone in all the world religions because he alone, as God says, I'll love you first. I'll go first. You don't have to figure it out. You don't have to love me first. You don't have to value my ways first. You don't have to follow my ways first. I will love you before you love me. I will open the door. I will set the table. I will make the invitations. I will give you the opportunity. Now, you don't have to come in and take my ways. You don't have to follow my ways, my truth. But I want to let you know, as God, I extend it to you first. See, all other religious systems say, earn it. You got to climb the mountain of God yourself. You need to get your life in order, and then God won't be so mad at you that maybe you can come and be around him. But Jesus alone says, no, no, no. Before you get it together, you come to me, and I'll help you get it together. And that's different. And that's why Jesus, we can now engage with him upward because, well, he engaged us first. Why don't you write that down? We can engage Jesus. We can engage God. We can engage him upward because he engaged us first. We re-engage him because he went first. We love him because he loved us first. So this is how Jesus kind of said it. Jesus said it in a way that kind of started this whole conversation off by letting us know that there's an order to doing the upward connection first. And he was asked on a numerous amount of occasions, hey, what's the most important thing? And they were always asking him because they had this thing back in the day. In Jesus' day, it was called the law and the prophets. The law and the prophets and the Torah. The Torah is the first five books of what we call the Old Testament. And the Torah included the law and the prophets. And the law was written by a guy named Moses, and it's called the Mosaic Law or the Law. And they all would argue about which amount of the laws were the most important. Now, there were 613 of them that they all had to follow. And if you broke any of them, they had other laws of how to kind of get back into right relationship with God. Jesus comes and reduces it all down and says, "That's we're going to work through all of what this is and keep the ones that I want us to all keep, and we'll do that. But here's what the most important one is." And he actually says there's two most important ones. And he says it to us in Mark chapter 12. He reduces 613 down to two. And the first one is, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. That's what the first is. Now, the second one is, and we're going to learn about this next week, he says, love your neighbor as yourself. And we're going to talk about how do we do that? How do we do it? Because often people are like, I know you're supposed to love your neighbor, love God, love your neighbor, love God, love your neighbor. Well, the love your neighbor, he actually says, love your neighbor as yourself. And so many of us try to work on loving our neighbor, but we don't even know how to love ourselves as God loves us. We don't know how to let God love us. We don't know how to be loved by God, and we don't know how to focus on God loving us. So you can't love your neighbor very well if you don't know how to love yourself, because you'll never love your neighbor as yourself, because yourself doesn't know how to be loved by God. And so we're going to talk about how do we have that inward connection. I want to invite you next week to come back and learn about just that. So when God sets it up, he says, don't start on the outward and don't even start on the inward. I want you to start on the upward. Love me. This is the most important thing you could do to start 2018, to get your family back on track, to get your relationship back on track, to get the kind of hope and redemption and strength that you need back in your life. But what does this practically look like? How do I do that? How do I practically engage upward? Because this is vital and important to get. Because this is not a dress rehearsal, y'all. This ain't gonna matter someday. And right now it's just like, well, this doesn't count. Like, this is just, you know, us getting ready for something else really important. No. It matters now. Right now is really important. Like, this, the stakes are high. It's very crucial. No matter what stage of life you're in, you got someone watching you, or you are developing habits that are going to be like the keystone lifestyle ways you choose for later in life when the stakes are going to be really big as well. And it's like, this is live. This is on air. This is not, you don't get a second chance at life. You don't get two, you get one, and you're doing it right now. And so it means that we can't just like, well, man, someday I'll do the whole God thing, and I'll look into that a little bit more and get a little more serious about it. Some of us, we got kids right now learning how to value God, how to value like his ways and what it means to live a life of purpose. Like, it's important today. And because of that, it's vital that we kind of figure out, well, how do we do this? I'd like you to write this thought down. We can re-engage upward by expressing our love to God through worship. Our love to God through worship. Expressing our love. That's a practical way to do it. And for us, the word worship, many of us, we have a different bunch of ideas and pictures that come into our mind. When you hear the word worship, it's like, well, what does that mean practically? And that's what I want to talk through. I want to talk through a few things David said. And David, if you're not a Bible reader, David is a very famous writer, king, and champion. And in fact, most of you know who David is just because you've probably heard the phrase David and Goliath. Well, this is that David. And David became the king of Israel, and his star is actually still featured on the nation of Israel's flag even today. So that's who David is. And he's also the great, 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 great. He was known as someone who loved to sing songs. He played the harp. He was a musician and a singer, but he was also a psalmist. He wrote things about what did it mean to worship God. And so for us, this is not going to be in your outline, but if you want to write this down, here's a working definition of worship. Anything you value so much that you move your life towards. That's worship. I value this so much, I move my life towards it. And for many of us, it's like a fill in the blanks. Like, if I had blank, I would be happy. If I only had more of, or if I could just get, or if I had fill in the blank, then my life would be fulfilled. And what Jesus is telling us is if anything else is in that space other than an upward engagement and connection to God, then you will actually not be happy. You will be scattered, confused, disappointed, because only God can fulfill that part of your heart. And when we engage the outward and we think, if these kids would just, if I could just make this money, if my boss just appreciated me, if my husband would see what I really do, if my wife would learn how to communicate to me in a way that makes me feel honored, like if I could just get all this stuff to happen, then I'd be okay. No, you wouldn't. You could have all of that and something would still be broken if God is not the foremost upward connection that we're pursuing. And when we are learning that, the inward starts to change in a way that we don't have the power to change it. Because there are some people that will hurt you so bad, you won't be able to forgive them on your own. There are some people that will say things about you that will be so difficult and so like confusing and also so like it will break apart and destroy things that you won't be able to fix it all. You won't be able to go into every department and be like, no, that's not how it went. You're going to have to trust and see God do his powerful thing. There will be some people that you will pass away and the pain will be so big that you won't be able to get through that grief on your own ability to feel comforted. You will need a comfort bigger than you. You will need forgiveness stronger than you. You will need wisdom outside of your wisdom to manage certain things. You will need something that is better than what you bring to the table. And that's why Jesus, who loves you, says, if you engage me first, then you get that stuff. You get that inward stuff and then the outward flow begins to have that kind of expression of the goodness, the greatness, the power of God. And so he tells us in this verse, this is Psalm 96, David writes it this way. How do we worship? How do we move our life towards God? Here's a few things he says. Verse 1, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. And this is an interesting phrase, to sing to the Lord all the earth. It means not just singers and not just musicians. And I know some of us as people, it's like when the songs come on, it's kind of like, hey, that's for the people up on the stage to do, right? Like, that's not really my thing. But actually, David says, no, sing to the Lord all the people. So he says there's something about singing that connects my soul to the truth of who God is. And he invites us to do that. Then he also says, sing to the Lord, praise his name. He says, I don't want you just to praise the name of like your favorite artist or your favorite show or you know, this Netflix show or of that thing. Or when I want you to also learn how to praise the name of God. Like, make sure that that's a part of what you praise and what you speak highly of and do that. And when you do that, that's worship. He says, declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all people. Make sure that you're talking about the good things that happen in your day among the people and your family. For my wife and I, we like to talk about, you know, hey, where did you see God work in your life today? Where did you see God convict you today of your heart? Or where did you see like just the beauty of the majesty of God? It doesn't matter if it's in the mountains, the streams, animals you see. It doesn't matter if it's in the, you know, an old man opening the door for his wife still and his feeble hands are holding it and he's still wanting to be honorable. And you just see the power of commitment and covenant. And you say, I saw God right there. But you pause and you take in, where do we see like the marvelous deeds of God among all the people? And then I like this one, verse 4. For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. He's to be praised above all gods. He's most worthy of praise. A couple weeks ago, I had taped the Warriors game. I told you I was from the Bay Area. My little girl, Eliana, she was playing over there with her Disney toys and doing her thing. And I was sitting there. The game was ending, and the Warriors were down, and they needed 3 points to win. Steph Curry comes off the top of a screen, and it's 3-2-1, and he shoots it. And while it's in the air, I stand up, and I'm like, oh! And so my daughter like looks up, like, what's happening in my life right now? And all of a sudden, it goes towards the hoop, and it's bam, it splashes, and they win. And I'm like, woo! And she looks up at me, and there's a phrase that I've taught her, like every good father should. And she goes,
Go, Warriors, go.
And I'm like, yes, baby, get over here. And we start dancing, go, Warriors, go. Go, Warriors, go. And we're just like having this really cool bonding father-daughter, daddy-daughter moment where she's learning about joy and fun and celebration and working hard and mastering your craft to the point where you could be a victor over things. And it won't always be easy, but it'll be worth it if you give your best. Like, I want her to learn these things. And I want her to love sports. And I want her to love the names of my favorite teams, and I want her to love Steph Curry, and she does, she knows him by face, and she's like, Steph, and I'm like, yes, our friend, and like, I want that for her. I want her to feel that kind of joy. I want her to love when we go and we see beauty and the ocean crashing, and her to be like, whoa, grande agua, right, because we speak Spanish to her, and so it's like, which is not how you say ocean, but it's my best Spanish. It's two words I know that describe what that thing is, which is big and water, so it's the big water. So, you know, it's like Spanish-speaking people in the room are like, gringo. You know, so I'm like, you know, it's like we're out there. I want her to see that and to love that stuff, and I'm all about it. I'm not the kind of pastor or dad that gets all overly spiritual, that everything's got to be like a Bible verse or whatever. It's like, no, I want it to be God, and I do think the ocean paints God and shows God, and I do think good food, come on, somebody, talks about how good God is, and I do think that winning shots and the joy and the fun and the community and the camaraderie and teamwork talks about the things that I think come from the heart of God. But I was there, and I thought, man, God, I don't want my little girl to just know the greatness of the name of my favorite team or my favorite player. I want to make sure that when she comes to church with me, that she also watches Daddy have a heart and a passion for the name of God, that he's most worthy of praise. That yeah, I praise when my team wins. And yeah, I praise when I get that bonus. And I am excited when this thing goes my way. But I want to make sure that that little girl, that she sees Daddy moving his life towards the things of God. And then when it's time to sing a song, I'll sing it. And when it's time to worship God and to consider his ways, I'll do it. And I won't be afraid because maybe I don't feel like I sing good, or because someone might watch me. I'm like, I don't care if anyone's watching me except you right now. I want you and then anyone who wants to be encouraged, like, God, I want her to know you're important, and that if she's going to get through tough things, like she'll grow up watching her daddy go through. She will one day know that dad lost his dad before she met him. She will one day know that we lost our brother-in-law. She will one day know that we went through tragedy, that we were betrayed by people we loved, and we had to deal with prison stuff with those. I mean, she will learn all about this pain that we went through, and I want when she gets old enough to know, wow, Daddy, you went through some tough stuff. I want her to be able to watch the way I worship and watch the way I move my life towards God and say, that's the only way to make it. That's how Daddy does it. I watch him on Sundays, and he worships God and church and the Bible and the way of God. And I've watched him apologize to Mom for the way he came off too harsh. I've watched him apologize to me for not being who God wants him to be. And that to me is making sure that that name gets most in my house. And this is I think a value that all of us probably have. And so as we start this year, how can we practically worship? I'd like you to write a few of these ways down. One would be with our time and our talent and our treasure. Our time. It's like, God, I value you so much, I'm going to give some time to the things of you. I'm not going to just veg out on Netflix at night. I'm going to read the Bible. Or I'm not going to get up in the morning and just start scrolling through Instagram or Facebook. Or just, I'm going to touch the YouTube or the YouVersion app and read. I'm going to try to connect to you this year, God. I'm going to really re-engage upward first and not go outward and try to find out what's going on in the world out there. I want to find out what's going in my heart. What does your word want to say to me? Not does what the world want to say to me. And I focus in on how do I do this. And I want to tell you, because I grew up in a religious thing. I know there's some of you in this room that you'll tend towards like, well, I got to go do this. And if I don't, God will be mad at me. And let me just remind you, God will not love you any less if you do not engage him upward. And I want to be clear about that. I am not presenting this to you because if you don't do it, God will not love you that much. Because that's what I believed when I grew up. I believed every time I messed up, God didn't love me. He loved me a little less, and then a little less, and then a little less. And then he got to the point where he's like double fisting lightning bolts, like, go ahead, try one more time, see what happens. Right? And a lot of us, that's kind of like, without admitting it, it's kind of how you act. It's kind of how you feel about your mistakes, and you sheepishly kind of like, I don't want to go to church. I don't want to pray. I don't want to read the Bible. Why? Because I don't deserve it because I'm so bad. And so we think we got to go earn it, and then we can talk to God. And Jesus is not like that. Let me tell you, whenever we don't engage upward, It never changes God's love for you. God's love for you is not based upon your actions, your behavior. It is based upon his character. It is based upon his goodness and his greatness. And he is unconditional in his love. As much as I could try to be unconditional in my love for my daughter, he's even better than that. He loves me more than I love her, and I don't even know how much more you could love someone. And yet he loves you and I like that, unconditionally, without any of your merits. The problem for me, as I found, is not that God loves me less when I don't engage him. God doesn't love me less. I love God less. That's what I found. When I don't engage God, I don't love him as much. I don't act like I care about his ways as much. I'm not as good of a man. I'm not as good of a husband. I'm not as good of a father. I'm not sacrificial. I'm not patient. I don't want to apologize. I'm defensive when someone points out my bad characteristics. I'm not as proactive. I'm just not the best version of who God wants me to be and who I want to be. And neither are you. We're none of us are our best when we don't engage God in the rightful place, when he's the premier priority. And so I want to give us an opportunity to learn how to do that today with those things. The last few would be with our words and our songs. Our words and our songs. How we sing. Do we just let the words and the songs go by, or do we engage with them? Do we let our words be full of positivity? Is the majority of the things that your kids hear, or is the majority of things your parents hear? Do your parents hear you complain more than they hear you talk about what you see that's going right? Our words can be worship, value giving towards God. And then of course, our actions, how we act. Do we apologize? Do we own our stuff? Or do we blame other people? Or are we good with the things that are presented before us? Do we try to honor God and worship him? Do we move our life forward towards God with our actions? And lastly, but not least, and this might even be my favorite, with our reverence and awe. Our reverence and awe. Now, how do we reverence and awe God? Can I tell you that I'm too busy sometimes for God? Probably not you. Probably no one else in this room but me, right? Let's talk about me for a second. Can we just talk about me? Is it okay if we talk about me for a second? Not you, me here. I am so busy wanting to go to the next thing that I don't have time for God. I don't. I need to go here, go there, drop this thing off, pick this thing up, go here, file this, call that, deposit this, pick up that, make that phone call, present this thing, write this sermon, read this thing, counsel this person, help this thing. I've got so much I got to do that I don't have time to slow down in reverence and awe of God. I don't. I don't have time to read about him. I don't have time to pray. I'm just like, God, can you just fix all the stuff that I don't like right now about my life? Can you imagine if anyone that you had a loving relationship with treated you like that? I mean, isn't that pretty like, whoa? Like, how long would you stay in that relationship? Not very long. And yet God stays in it with me. He loves me so much that he's like, I love you and I want to work with you. And yet I feel compelled to say, God, let me slow my life down and just look out the window every now and then at you and the goodness of you. Let me just get on the floor with Eliana and just take a couple minutes right now and just be like, yeah, I got stuff to do, but right now I just want to be on her level and just take in the greatness and the goodness of God, how good he is, how many people can't have kids, and I got one. Took us 3.5 years. I didn't think we could have them. And then we had a pastor pray for us after a conference I was speaking at. And 2.5 weeks later, we got pregnant. And she's our little miracle. And every now and then, I reverence that. I have awe for that. And I slow down. I just take that in. And then there's times in church where the song is saying something. And I don't just go through it. I stop. And I go, wait, Chris, slow down. I know you got to go. I know you got stuff to do. I know you're hungry. But just wait. And I look at a word and I just go, that's the phrase for the next couple minutes. I'm just going to think about that idea of God. And I'm going to just tell God. Or there's times where the song comes up and I don't even know the words, but I'll read them and then I'll start to sing them back. And then there's times where I'll just say, God, I don't get crazy. I'm not weird. This is as crazy as we get at Eastlake. It's just hands. I just go, God, I just want to honor you and just thank you for who you are to me. And I have reverence and awe for him. I slow down. So what I'd like to do for a couple moments, I'm going to invite the worship team to come up. I want to give us a chance to do that. I know we got stuff to do. I know we got to run out. But for just a couple moments, can we spend a moment saying, God, let me worship you. Let me move my time, my talent, my treasure, my thoughts, my words, my actions, and my song. Let me reverence and have awe for you. And I'm gonna leave the stage. I'm going to pray for us. I'm going to go sit down. I'm going to do it with you. I'm going to sit right over there. And I'm just going to slow down. And I preached this sermon 3 times today. I got to drive back an hour to my wife, and there's things we're going through in our marriage and our family and stuff, and I need this just like you need this. I need to go sit down and just be like, okay, God, I preached it, I know it, I've learned it, but I want to just slow down and just go, God, I worship you. I move my life towards you because if I can connect upward, it changes my inward, and the outward expression of that will have your mark on it. Let me pray for us. God, I ask for the next moment as we listen to the words of this song, as we reflect, as we slow down, as we look out the window of life and we take this in. I pray, God, that we would experience you in a way, for some of us maybe, that we've never experienced you before. May we get the kind of strength that we need. May we get the kind of forgiveness we need. May we get the kind of peace and comfort and joy and truth, God, that we need today. And as we engage upward, may we start to sense and trust that even we don't feel the inward, may we start to sense, God, that something is happening that's bigger than us. And may we then, God, be prepared over the next couple of weeks for an outward flow of that. I pray that you would do that in these next few moments, Lord.